All right, they both say good morning. Let's begin. So we left off. Today's daf is Ayin Beis. We left off two lines up from the bottom, Ayin Aleph Amud Beis. Uba Midbar Mai Taima Lo Mol. So we'll say one of the things we established in yesterday's daf is that in the desert, they did not do Bris Milah. So the Gemara says, why not? So one possibility is because of weakness, that because they were constantly traveling and perhaps the desert conditions were a bit adverse, therefore, again, they were unable to go ahead and do Mila. So one possibility is because of weakness. And the other possibility is because the northern wind did not go ahead and blow for them. Rashi says, Ruach Tzafonis, Ruach Tzafonis, Nocha, Lo Chama V'lo Tzonenes, V'chama Zoracha. So apparently, again, the way the northern wind is, it's not too cold, it's not too hot. It ultimately disperses some of the clouds and allows the healing rays of the sun to be felt. So all the time that they were in the desert, this northerly wind did not blow, and therefore, by definition, it appears it would have been Sakana. It would have been dangerous for them to do Mila. So far, we have either Chulsha de Orcha, just general fatigue from travel, and to go ahead and give the trauma of Bris Milah perhaps would have been dangerous. Or second possibility is they didn't have the northern wind. Disanya, because we're in the Braisa, call Osanar Baim Shana Shayisha Bamidbar, Lo Nash Balam Ruach Tzifonis. All 40 years that we were in the desert, the northern wind did not blow for us. My time, what's the reason for that? So one possibility is the absence of the northern wind was a form of rebuke by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. By HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that again, the northern wind, is because it represents the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the fact that it did not blow was a form of rebuke. The other possibility is, Delo Nivdar Anani Kavod. The other possibility is, remember again, as we said before, the northern wind has the ability to disperse the clouds. The Anani Kavod were centered around Klal Yisrael. And that was their protection. And therefore, again, the northern wind did not blow in order to go ahead and maintain that level of protection. The Amra Papa Hilchach, Yoma di Iva Vyom de Shusa, Lo Mahalinam. So we'll say again, so far what we have over here, now that second answer, by the way, of course, that the northern wind did not blow in order not to disperse the Anani HaKavod, is quite an interesting answer, because one would have thought that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have caused that northerly wind to blow without dispersing the Anani HaKavod, but okay, that's the Gemara answers. So the Papa is based on this, Hilchach, Yoma De'iva V'yoma De'shusa, Lo Mahalinon Bei. Therefore, based on what we just said, one should not do a Bris Milah on a cloudy day. Rashi says Yom HaDi'iva, Yom HaMu'unan, and Yom HaDishusa, Sheruach Diromis Min HaSheves, Vikashim Mikala Ruchos. So if based on what we just learned, a person should not do a Bris Milah on a cloudy day, nor should a person go ahead and do a Bris Milah on a day that a southern wind is blowing. Because again, as we just said, cloud cover is detrimental because it prevents the healing rays of the sun from coming on the Nimol. The southern wind is also problematic, is also detrimental. And therefore, the Maisa, Lo malina bay velo misuch rinon bay. Rashi says over here. I'm sorry. Velo misuch rinon bay. So the Gemara says vahidna velo misuch rinon bay. And we should not look at Rashi. Yoma deshusa shirach dromus ben hasheves v'kasha mikala ruchos vahidna. So the Gemara says, but now, so this is an interesting concept, this is a good Chabura topic also. Va'idna Dashu Be'Rabim means, and now that people do it anyway. Dashu Be'Rabim literally means people trample on it. Shomer Pesoyim Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu watches over the simple ones. Well, Pesi literally means a fool. Peshor Pesoyim Hashem means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and watches over simple people. Both say, this concept is used that when something may be inherently dangerous, there may be an inherent danger. So generally we would say, the Torah's mandate to safeguard my health and my well-being would prevent me from engaging in any action or activity that has some level of inherent danger. But if it's something that everybody does, then by definition we assume there's a certain shmira, a certain divine protection that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives for what we'll call, I guess, activities of daily living. So for example, let's say driving. So driving is inherently, comes with an inherently, I don't know the statistical probability of death or injury every single time a person gets behind the wheel, but there must be some level of statistical probability. But yet, again, lemaisa, because it's a common everyday activity, therefore halacha lemaisa, what will be permitted to do? This would be either be in contradistinction to skydiving. Again, I think if you were to ask your local Orthodox rabbi, is skydiving permitted? So the answer would be absolutely not. Absolutely not. I know you have plans in Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Fischel. I know. Right? Absolutely not. Why? Because to go ahead and willingly engage in any activity that carries with it a heightened risk for death or for injury, one is not permitted to do that. So the Gemara is saying over here that I might have thought that Lemaisa, I shouldn't be able to do the Bris Milah on a cloudy day, on a southerly day. Here's the problem. The problem, of course, is you do Bris Milah when you have to do Bris Milah on the eighth day, independent of atmospheric or meteorological conditions. So the idea the Gemara says is since people do it, even though there are these factors, we assume Shomer Pesayim Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu watches over us. Ten Rabbanan, Kol Osan Arboim Shana Shai Yisrael B'Midbar, the 40 years that we were in the desert, Lo Haya Yom Shlo Nashba Ruach Tzvonetz Bechatzi Alayla, the northerly wind would blow every night at midnight. Every night at midnight. Now, this is interesting. It's not contradicting what we said before. We just said before that there was no northern wind. That's why they didn't do the Bris Milah. So remember, that's talking about during the day. What the Gemara is suggesting over here is that that northerly wind did blow every day at midnight, or every night at midnight. Shnei Amar, because the Pasuk says, Vahi bechatzi alayla. The Gemara quotes the Pasuk from Akkas Bechoros that it was at midnight and HaKadosh Baruch Hu came out and smote. Is that the right word? Smote? Smote. Right, or from Baltimore, smote, right? Right. So Hashem he called Bechor, right? So good. No problem. That was a shout out to the Baltimoreans. Good. So what happens? Hashem he called Bechor, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and he killed every firstborn. Now both say, my Talmud, the Gemara said, what does one thing have to do with the other? Right. So what does the fact that Makas Bechoros happened at midnight have to do with the Ruach Tzafonis happening at midnight? To which the Gemara says, Hakamash Malan De'is Ratzon Milsehi. This teaches us that there are certain times of divine favor. So the Gemara understands that the fact that Makas Bechoros took place at midnight indicates that midnight is a time of divine favor for Klal Yisrael. Therefore, the same way that Makas Bechoros demonstrates to us that midnight is a time of Eis Ratzon, so too the Gemara says that throughout the years in the desert, as much as the northerly wind did not blow during the day, it did blow at midnight at a time of Eis Ratzon. Rashi says, Eis Ratzon Milsehi, Dechevan Dechatzon Salayla Eis Ratzon Havi Lamakas Bechoros, Havi Nami Eis Ratzon Ruach Tzifonis, Ve'en Lachayom Sheruach Tzifonis, Ein Min Hashem So Bechatzi Alayla. So interestingly enough, therefore the Gemara says, since it was an Eis Ratzon Makas Bechoros, it's an Eis Ratzon also for the northerly wind. Now Rashi goes on to explain, and we saw as well say in Maseches Brachos, Rashi says, he says, V'zehoye Simon LeDavid, Kinur Taloy Lo Lamala Mimitaso, V'nikva Klapei Tzafon, Kevan Shegiya Chatzos Laila, Ruach Tzafonis Min HaShevespo U'min Agin Me'ilov, V'hu Ne'ar. We'll say, remember again, we learned this in Brachos, David HaMelech suspended, he used to suspend a kinor. A kinor literally means like a harp, but a stringed instrument. So, and what happened? When he arranged it in the northern direction, so that when the wind would blow, it would strum the strings. That was his alarm clock to get up. David HaMelech got up at Chatzos. He slept for a couple of hours, he got up at Chatzos, and that's when he would sing his shiros, his shpachos. So that was his simon. So he relied on this midnight Ruach Tzifonis. Rashi just says, V'hai dinokit hacha arboim shana lomer lecha, shafilo osan mem shana dinezufim hayu v'lo nashpalu b'yamim, nashpu b'chatzos layla mishum de'is ratzon. Rabbi says, we just said before, and Rashi just points out that even though we said that during the 40 years in the desert, the Ruach Tzifonis did not blow, that's by day, but at Chatzos every night, it in fact did blow. Amrafuna, Dvar Torah, and I'm also saying, now we go back to some of the halachos concerning Milah. This is actually an interesting case. Dvar Torah, Mashuch Ochel Betruma, Umidivreim Gazulam Mishneer Karov. So we'll say, we're getting into now a case of a Mashuch. Mashuch, Rashi says, is Mashuch Mahul, Shinim Shecha Arla, so Vikisisa Es Ha'atara. And I will say, so a Mashuch is someone who has some of, he had a bris milah, but some of the skin in the makom milah was stretched so that it covers over the tip, it covers over the actual makom milah, and it looks like a person has a foreskin. looks like a person has a foreskin. So in reality, there is no foreskin, but Lamaisa, it looks as if a person is uncircumcised. Just the background to this, by the way, is sometimes this was done by Jews, intentionally to themselves, who did not want to look Jewish. Other times it was imposed. So the issue over here is, the Rav Huna says, midaraisa, a mashuch is permitted, when we were established yesterday, that an orel is not permitted to eat truma. So now the question is, what's the status of the mashuch? So Rav Huna says, a mashuch midaraisa is permitted to eat truma, very simply because he's circumcised. But midrabanon, he may not go ahead and eat truma until that skin is cut away. Midrabanon, why? Because he looks like an orel. He looks uncircumcised. So the Gemara says, meiser is a kasha, mashuch tzar shiyim, midrabanon. A mashuch has to do another mila midrabanan vitikarile my karila, and that. So the Gemara says like this. Look at Rashi. Not yet. Vitikarile my karila. So we'll say what it sounds like over here when it says mashuch tzarach shiima midrabanan. The Gemara says vitikarile my karila. So now again, you have this brisa that clearly indicates that midda araisa, this is totally fine. Midrabanan, he requires, absolutely requires a bris. Vidikarila makara, so what was the havamina? Hatsarich katani. Say it says, tsarich, look at Rashi, hatsarich katani. Midrabanan, midalo katani, mashuch hareza aru, to which the Gemara says, katoi b'seifa. He made a mistake or he was led astray by the seifa. What does the seifa say? Rabbi Huda omer lo yimo mipnei shesakana hilo. Rabbi Huda says, he should not do a sakana, he should not do a mila, because it is a sakana for him. Why is it a sakana to do a mila on a mashuch? Rashi says, Shemayase krus shavcha, because he may become a krus shavcha. And I will say, krus shavcha is someone who's maimed in the mila area. Now remember, the reason why there's a concern for injury in this case is why? Because remember, you're not actually cutting away any arla. There's no arla here. That's actually the skin of the makomila. So the concern over here is, I might have thought that even midrabanon, we should not have to do anything. Kamash malon, know that you still have to do something. So the Gemara says the following. But many had this process done during the days of Ben Koziba, and they had sons and daughters. Now, both say, who's Ben Koziba? Ben Koziba is Bar Kokhva. Bar Kokhva. So there were many during the days of Bar Kokhva who were considered a mashuch and had to have this excess skin cut away. And yet, Baruch Hashem, they were not adversely affected. They were still fine afterwards. Look at Rashi b'mei ben Koziba. Shemashchum ovdei kochavim ba'ones bekrach betar v'gavra yad ben Koziba v'nilcham bahem v'nitzcham u'malach ayisor shtei shalom mechza v'chazru mal b'yam. So Pranzi will say that in the days of Ben Koziba, so this was a practice that was imposed by the Gentile rulers, by the Romans, to go ahead and stretch the skin of the Mila area to make the Jews look uncircumcised. And when Bar Kokhva came to power, remember, Bar Kokhva ruled. Bar Kokhva was a melech. He acted as a melech for over two years. During that time, they circumcised, quote-unquote, that additional skin. And yet we see they were not adversely affected. Shene emar, himol yimol afilu me'apamim. Because the Pasuk says, double lashon of himol yimol, which in the double lashon tells us that even if you have to do it 100 times, and we'll say, obviously what that means is that even if the original arla is cut away, but there's something else that makes the person look uncircumcised, there's an obligation to remedy that. Va'omer, furthermore it says, ve'es brisi hafer. They have annulled my bris. Lirabos es hamashuch. This comes to include the mashuch, i.e. someone who goes in and stretches the skin to make himself look uncircumcised. My va'omer, what does it mean when the Gemara says va'omer? V'chitema, perhaps you'll say, hai himol yimol lirabos tzitzin hama'akvin es hamila. Maybe himol yimol, the double lashon, teaches me that if there are leftover pieces of flesh, just like we saw yesterday, right, that you need the prima and the priya. You need the cutting away of the foreskin and the cutting away of the membrane afterwards. So I might have thought that himo yimo means that if you leave little pieces of the membrane there, that lemais again, you have to go back and cut it away. Therefore, the Pasuk says, they have gone ahead and they have annulled my bris. This comes to include the mashuch, somebody who has the skin stretched, that they have to cut that away as well. Whosoever he holds, so he originally thought that the fact that the Gemara brings a Pasuk to teach me that the mashuch must go ahead and cut away the excess skin, that it must say there's a chiyuv da'araisa for him to do a milah. Velohi, and it's not true, midrabanan. Velohi, excuse me, that is not correct. It's really only midrabanan. Ukra asmachta ba'alma. And the pasuk is just simply an asmachta. So we'll say, where we hold right now is the following idea. That Rav Huna's statement that a mashach requires a milah, right? The mashach, remember, so the mashach, and the mashach happens in one of two situations. A mashach could either be, a person does it to himself, stretches the skin so he appears uncircumcised, it's done to him, or it could be also that maybe just happens as a result of some type of physical condition. That I don't know if that's possible or not, but that's perhaps a third possibility. Either way, if a person has this situation where the excess skin makes him look like he is uncircumcised, Rav Huna says, midda oraisa, this is not a problem, for the simple reason that he had a bris milah. Because again, according to midda oraisa, the definition of arelos is only the arla, not excess skin. However, midrabanan, he is obligated to remedy this particular situation, but it's only a rabbinic obligation. And even the pasuk that the Gemara brings to support this idea of himol yimol, right? You have to constantly circumcise, even over and over and over, is just simply an asmachta. Meisveit, Gemara is a kasha. Tumtum in ochel b'tshuma. A tumtum is not permitted to eat the tshuma. Now, also remember, who is the tumtum? The tumtum is someone who has the whose sexual organs covered over by a membrane. So it's not clear exactly what it is. What it is. So a tumtum ain ochel b'tshuma is not permitted to eat the tshuma. Rashi says over here, tumtum ein ochel b'tshuma, she'im hayar nikra yimtza zachar, v'hari hu orel. Now, Rabbi say, interesting enough, why can't a tumtum eat truma? It's very interesting, meaning, because Rabbi say, think about this in just a moment. Whether the tumtum is a man or a woman, it's the only one of two possibilities. So, let's say, obviously, we're talking about a tumtum who's a kohen, or from a kohanic family. Either way, whether you're a man or a woman, you could go out to eat truma. So, what's the issue, says Rashi? The issue is that if the membrane opens, and it turns out that he's a man, he's an orel. Right, presumably he's not going to have a bris. He will not have yet had a bris milah. An orel is not permitted to eat truma, as we already established in yesterday's daf. So tumtum ein ochel b'truma. However, nashav va'avadav ochlin. However, his wives and his servants may eat mashuch. But if a person is a mashuch, v'nolad kishu mahol, or a person was born with a bris milah, already circumcised, hare elu ochlim, they are permitted to go ahead and eat truma. Androgynous, what about an androgynous? Ochel b'truma is permitted to eat truma. And the Rashi points out over here, this is now androgynous is one who has both sets of characteristics. Rashi says over here, androgynous, mahul mutr le'achel b'truma. So remember again, this is assuming that the androgynous's male characteristics are nimal, right? That they're circumcised. Ve'ein ochel b'kodshim. However, again, he is not permitted to go ahead. The androgynous is not permitted to eat kodshim. Okay, so the reason for that, by the way, is because only the male kohanim are permitted to go ahead and eat of kodshei kadoshim and not women. And because, again, we don't know what this androgynous is, therefore, by definition, he can't eat it. Okay, so now the Gemara goes back and analyzes this. Tumtum eino ochel, lo bit, I'm sorry, but now the Gemara ends off with this concluding phrase. Tumtum eino ochel lo b'truma v'lo b'kodshim. So the tumtum may not eat truma and may not eat kodshim. Katani mihasna, I will say, so now, why are we bringing this down? Because remember, we're focused on the discussion about the mashuch. So katani mihas, what comes from this? Mashuch v'nolat kishuhu ma'u hari elu ochlin. What do we learn from this? That the mashuch, remember I was saying, again, stretched skin, the mashuch, and the Nolar Kishum Mahol, they are able to go ahead and eat Truma. Then I will say, who does this contradict? Tiyufta, Tiyufta, Rav Huna, Tiyufta. So we'll say, who does this contradict? This contradicts Rav Huna. Because what did Rav Huna say? Rav Huna said that a Mashuch, what Rav Huna say? Now, what did Rav Huna say? Rav Huna said that a Mashuch may not eat Truma. Granted, it's Midrabanan, man, it may not eat Truma, but he passes, he can't eat Truma. But yet the Braisa here says that what? That the Mashuch may eat Truma. Indeed, this is a refutation to the position of Rav Huna. Amar Mar, tumtum eino ochel b'truma. So Mar says the tumtum may not go ahead and eat truma. Nashav, now we're going through this braisa one by one. So tumtum eino ochel b'truma. So tumtum may not eat truma. Nashav avadam ochlim b'truma. Oh, excuse me. Nashav avadam ochlim, but his wives and his servants may.
How do you marry if you couldn't tell?
Nashav l'tumtum minale. How could a tumtum? How could a tumtum get married? Right? How could a tumtum get married? So the Gemara says, "Well, say now, look at Rashi for just a moment. The question over here by Tumtum is, remember, Tumtum, we don't know the gender. That's the big issue of, you don't know the gender. So how could the Tumtum get married? So the Gemara says, Ilema de Kaddish, if you want to say that he did Kiddushin, or I should say it did Kiddushin, then what? Desanyo, Tumtum Shekidish Kiddushav Kiddushin. I will say, because listen to this Braisa. Let's say a Tumtum did Kiddushin. Let's say a Tumtum went over to a woman and said, Hare at nekudesh asli bekesev zu. He gave her money. So what's the halacha? The kiddushin works. Similarly, niskadish, kiddushin. If somebody was mekadish a tumtum, so the kiddushin works as well. Now I will say, now what does that mean that the kiddushin works? Amar da amar l'chumba. Now I will say, now when do we say the kiddushin works? That means we're machmir. What does it mean, Rabbi Osai? That if a tumtum was mekadish woman, what do we say to that woman? Before you can marry anyone else, what do you have to do? You need to get. And if somebody was mekadesh a tumtum, we'll make the person give the tumtum a get. Meaning l'chumra, because we don't know what the tumtum is, we will say that you have to give a get to dissolve this union. However, again, that's only l'chumra. L'kula mi'aminon. Where we go out and we say l'kula, what does it mean l'kula? L'kula will mean that if, let's say, a tumtum was mekadesh a woman, would we say that because of that kiddushin, she, let's say the tumtum is a kohen or of a kohanic family, would we say that because of that kiddushin, so this woman can now eat truma? So of course he wouldn't say that. The only time we say that the kiddushin is a kiddushin is for chumra purposes, to require a get to dissolve the union. But we would never imagine saying that lamaisa, the kiddushin is good enough to allow a woman who the tumtum was mekadesh to actually eat truma. Safek ishu. The tumtum is a safek isha. The ein isha mekadesh as isha. And one woman cannot be mekadesh another woman. So the Gemara is saying over here, so what is the case then of the quote unquote tumtum's wife? It's impossible. Because we'll say again, what we've established is if a tumtum is mekadesh a woman, then ein achinami, we will recognize that kiddushin on a chumradik level to say that he has to give her a get in order to dissolve the union. But we don't actually recognize that marriage as a valid marriage, let's say to an able to eat truma. So what's the case then of the tumtum's wife? Amar Abaye, kishe beitzav nikaros mibachutz. Arabo say, what's the case over here? The case over here is where the beitzim, the testicles, are outside of the membrane. In other words, Ratabo say, that lemaisa, you could tell he's male. You can tell he's not submitting. So if it's based on nikar bachutz, so then what's the issue over here? So we'll say, the issue over here is if you look, well, not yet, I'm sorry. Let's see. So the Gemara says the following. Kishabetz of Nikaros Mibachutz. Where again, so therefore, we know he's male. Rava Amar Rava says, no, my Nashav. What does it mean, his wife, his wives? Imo. It means his mother. It means that Rabbi said that a tumtum enables his mother to eat. Meaning, so Rabbi said, when would this case come up? So if you look at Rashi, actually, not yet. I'm a little too eager to get to Rashi over here. Okay, well, we'll get to fine. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? Ma'u detema. So the Gemara says, Imo pshita, of course his mother could eat. What's the chiddush over there? So we'll say, let me tell you this outside now. So the idea over here would be, if let's say a Bas Yisrael married a Kohen. So we'll say, again, remember, a Bas Yisrael married a Kohen could eat Shuma, of course, as long as her husband is alive. But even if her husband dies, she could continue to eat Shuma when? As long as she has a kid. Let's say the kid she had with the Kohen is a tumtum. So the Gemara says, what would I have thought? Molid ma'achil, shein molid eno ma'achil. I might have thought that it's only a child who himself is capable of having offspring. That's a child that permits the mother to continue to eat truma, but a child who cannot go ahead and have offspring ultimately would not entitle his mother to eat. And a tumtum, of course, would be an offspring that is not able to have offspring. Kamashmalon, that we don't look at the ability of the offspring to have children. Rather, as long as there is offspring, that enables the mother to continue to eat truma even after her husband passes away. Tashma. So the Gemara says Tashma. Fine. Okay, so also remember, so far we have two different opinions. So there are two different ways as to you can understand Nashav. So according to Abaye, the case of the Tumtum is Beitzav Nikaros, so we know he's male. Therefore, because we know he's male, he can affect marriage, and because he can affect marriage, ultimately he would enable his wife to go and eat Truma. According to Rava, it's not talking about his wife at all. Nashav means the women in his life, which specifically refers to his mother. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Fine, bishlam ala abaye tanareisha arel vaday v'katani seifa safekar." So, what's according to Rava? I understand why the Braise includes the case of Aral and the case of Tumtum, because the case of Aral is a case of Vada Arelus, and the case of Tumtum is a case of Safek Arelus. Ela l'Rava, Tumtum de Seifa Lamali. But according to Rava, why do I need the case of the Tumtum in the Braise? After all, my Tumtum, Aral. According to Rava, if you know that it's Beitz of Nikaros, if the testicles are on the outside, and you know that he's male, what's the problem with Tumtum? Why can't the Tumtum eat Truma? Why? Because he's an Aral. That's the issue over here, right? Because I know that the rest of the male characteristics are inside that membrane. So I know he's a male, but I know he's uncircumcised. So essentially, he's an Aral. If this is your understanding, why does the Braisa have to bring down two cases of Arelos? So the Gemara says, El Rava Tumtum de Seifel Amali, my Tumtum Aral. Hashta Aral Vada, Hashta Safek Aral Lo Achil, Vadai Aral, Vadai Aral Achil. So we'll say, if a case of Safek Aral, which is the case essentially of Tumtum, will not go ahead and eat, do we have to say anything about the Vadai Aral? So the Gemara says, no, Matam Kamar. The Braisa is coming to explain. Matam Tumtum Eino Ochel B'Truma, why can't the Tumtum eat Truma? Rava will say, Suzy Abai will say, Mipnesha Safek Aral Hu, because he is a Safek Aral, the Aral Eino Ochel B'Truma V'lo B'Kachim, and the Aral is not permitted to eat Truma, and not permitted to eat Kachim. And I will say, I want to be clear. So remember, Abai is not saying that every single case of Tumtum is Kishe Beitz of Nikaros, right? That's a specific case in this Braisa, because that's why he's able to affect Kiddushin. But under normal circumstances, any unqualified case, so really Tumtum means that everything is inside the membrane. So the Gemara goes weiter. Let's say it's machlokes tanoim.
In the times the
Braisa
says tumtum.
No, the Braisa talks about tumtum in ochal b'truma. Correct, and then the last time, yes, the first tumtum and second tumtum. So the Gemara says the following. Let's say that this is machlokes tanoim. Mashuch v'nolot kishumo. If a person is a mashuch or he was born without the arla, v'gershin iskayer kishuhu mohu, or a convert who converted when he is already circumcised, the katan sha'avar zmano, or a katan abosei who's already passed the eighth day, ushar kol hani molim, or anyone else who is circumcised, le'isuye mishiyesh lo shtei arlos, to come to include someone who has two foreskins, what is that locha? Eino nimolin elabayom. They can only be circumcised by day. So we'll say all of these individuals, some of them require mila midoraisa, some of them require mila midirabanon, but the common denominator is everyone requires, ultimately again, mila by day. That's the Tanakam. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon says, Bizmano inimolin elabayom, Shalom bizmano nimolin bayom ubalaila. So we'll listen to this. Rabbi Elazar Shimon says, no. When a mila is bizmano, mila bizmano must be done by day. Mila shalom bizmano can be done by day or by night. By day or by night. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, my love, hakamiflagi, what are they arguing about? Now, what the Gemara is specifically focusing on over here is the case of mashuch. Right, the case of Mashuch. So remember again, you have the Tanakhama saying that the Mashuch could only have his bris milah by day, and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon saying the Mashuch could have his bris milah both by day and by night. So the Gemara says, what are they arguing about? One opinion says that the obligation to circumcise a Mashuch is the Araisa. The Rabbi says, if the obligation is the Araisa to circumcise the Mashuch, then when should his milah have to be? The milah should be when? By definition, by day. Omar Savra Mashuch the Rabbanon. And the other opinion says, no, Mashuch is only chayv mila midrabanan. If it's only midrabanan, then what? Then you should even be able to do it at night. V'tizbara, but let's analyze this. Katan sha'avar zmano mi'ika l'mandam midrabanan. I will say, it doesn't make sense. Because remember, the Braisa brought down a whole list of people who require bris mila. So one of the examples was a child who is past the eighth day. Then I will say, again, the assumption is that all of the examples listed in the Braisa we just read on the bottom of Amud Aleph are all what in the same category. They're either all Doraisas or all Dorabanas. Let me ask you this question. So a child who is not Ma, who is not Namo, who is not circumcised on day 8, now it's day 9, 10, 11, 12. So what's his status? What's the nature of his obligation? Daraisa. So the Gemara says, "V'tizbra katan sha'avres banam mi'ikel ma'adamar d'rabbanon." Can you say that a katan who missed his eighth day, ultimately now there's only a rabbinic obligation to circumcise him? Ela dekuli alma mashuch d'rabbanon. Rather, again, everyone agrees that a mashuch is d'rabbanon. The katan sha'avres mano daraisa, and certainly a katan who has passed his eighth day is certainly daraisa. V'ha'cha b'ha'kim iflagi. And here is what they argue about. Mar savar darshinan ubayom, umar savar lo darshinan ubayom. Look at Rashi. One opinion says that we darshin ubayom. Rashi says, mar savar darshinan ubayom vav yisera. Also, remember again, that what the phrase that they're referring to over here is ubayom hashmini imal basar arlaso, and on the day. Now that vav is extra. It could have just said bayom hashmini. You don't need ubayom. Now, what's the extra vav? Look at Rashi. Mar savar darshinan ubayom vav yisera. It's an extra vav. Dematzi lemichtav bayom hashmini. It should have just said on the eighth day. Imo basar lasav ksev ubayom leisuye mila shelo bizmana, to come to include what? That even a mila shelo bizmana, even a mila that's not taking place on its designated day, on the eighth day, must still what? Must still take place by day. The afagav de mashuch meachalom misrabi to hamid rabbanan hu ubasra achitakun kevan de kadan shavrez mano misrabi afagav de shalobiz mano hu haynami taknu rabbanan king darai. So basta, listen to this. So one opinion says that we darshan ubayom, and ubayom teaches me that what? Now let's be very clear. Ubayom hashim rabbasol is teaching me that a child has to have his mila on the eighth day. The extra vav ubayom teaches me that even if the mila is not being done on the eighth day, it must still what? Must still what? It must still be done by day. And since even though mashuch is only midirabanan, the dirabanan is modeled after the deoraisa, and just like biblical mila must take place by day, so too again what? The mila of the mashuch also must take place by day. On the other hand, umar savar lo darshinan ubayom. The other opinion holds that no, we do not darshin ubayom. And Rabbah say, now again, remember, we know, why wouldn't you darshin ubayom? We spoke about this already. Why wouldn't you darshin it? Because remember, not everyone agrees that you darshin extra vavs. Remember, we saw this in yesterday's daf. Not everybody agrees that you darshin extra vavs. So the Gemara is suggesting over here, here's what everybody agrees with. Everybody agrees, of course, that a katan shelo bizmano, a child on day 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 15, 22, whatever it is going to be chay medorais. And everybody agrees that mashuch is dirabanan. Everybody agrees with that. The question is, do you darshan ubayom? If you darshan ubayom, it tells you that any time you do a mila, it's always by day. And if that's true by biblical mila, the rabbi structured the halacha for rabbinic mila the same way. On the other hand, others say, we don't darshan ubayom. If you don't darshan ubayom, perhaps it's only a mila bizmano that you have to do by day. But a mila shelo bizmano does not need to be done by day. Ki ha diyas Rabbi Yochanan v'kadarish. This then say Rabbi Yochanan was sitting and he was dashing. No sar bismano el nisraf el avayom. Rabbi say no sar. Remember, what is no sar? No sar is any carbon left over after its permitted window of consumption. So immediately when the window of consumption closes, the carbon becomes no sar. So on that day you have to burn it. So that's called no sar bismano. Is no sar bizmano, eno nisraf el bayom, has to be burned by day. Shelo bizmano, nisraf bein bayom bein malayla. But Rabbi, let's say you don't burn it immediately that day, you leave it over to the next day, then what's the halacha? You can burn it anytime you want. So the Gemara says, ve'esvei Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Lazar asks, that's Rabbi Yochanan's shita. Rabbi Lazar raised the kashet Rabbi Yochanan, einli elanim ol shmini sheinamo el bayom. I only know that a bris mila bizmano on the eighth day has to be done by day. Minayin l'rabos l'tisha l'asara l'chadasar l'shneimasar minayin. How do I know that even on the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th, it also has to be done by day? Talmud lomar ubayom. Therefore, the pasuk says it has to be done by day. Vafi the extra vav ubayom. Now, the Gemara is suggesting over here, it looks like, that what Rabbi Elazar is telling Rabbi Yochanan is in the same way that mila, even shelo bizmana, has to be done by day. So too, when burning nosar, even if it's now a second day after the window of consumption has closed, it also should what? Only be burned by day. The Gemara says the following. So the Vafilu Mandalo Darish Vav, so excuse me, and even according to the Mandamar who does not darshan Vavin, most of you had this before, right? Remember, Rabbi Akiva is the one who darshans Vavin. But let's say we start, but Rabbi Shimon does not darshan Vavin. Everyone agrees that what? Vav He Darish. Everyone agrees that you darshan a Vav and a He. And I was saying, what does it mean, a vav and a hey? So remember, again, for example, by bris milah, it's ubayom hashmini. Ubayom hashmini. Again, you have really two, it could have just said biyom shmini. But if that says the extra vav and a hey, everyone will agree that you dash in that. See, ishtek, he was quiet. He was quiet. So also, remember, this is now, remember, this was Rebbe Lazar asking Chashat Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan was the one who said that if you have nosar, if it's nosar on the first day, you have to burn it by day. But if you leave it over past the first day, you can burn it by day and by night. Rebbe Lazar brought a kasha, contradiction, not kasha on him, based bris milah. And Rebbe Lazar seemed to have refuted Rabbi Yochanan's position. So Rabbi Yochanan was silent. Basar dinafik. Basar Dinafik, after he left, Amalei Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan said to Reish Lakish, Ra'isi leben pedas, sheyoshev vidoresh kimoshem epi agvura. I see ben pedas, that he goes ahead and he darshins like Moshe Rabbeinu from the Shechina. Now remember, who's Ben Pedas? So the assumption over here is that Rabbi Elazar, the unqualified Rabbi Elazar, is Rabbi Elazar Ben Pedas. Rabbi Yochanan was incredibly impressed by Rabbi Elazar. That Rabbi Elazar, he said, Rabbi Elazar, he mamish speaks with such clarity, like Moshe Rabbeinu getting it directly from the Shechina. What a compliment, right? He speaks with such clarity that literally like Moshe Rabbeinu from the Shechina. I'm really Reish Lakish. Didehi. I'm sorry. Ben Pedas Sheshuvidakamur. Amrlei Reish Lakish. Didehi. So Reish Lakish says, tell me, do you think that it's his own teachings? Masnisihi. Right? This is not, meaning he didn't come up with this on his own. He's relaying what he learned. So the Gemara says, Heicha Tanalei, where is this taught? Betaras Konim, Sodom Vayikra. Nafik, he went out. Tanye Bitlasi Yomi, he learned this entire Torah's Konim in 3 days. The Savra Bitlasi Yarchin, he became proficient in it within 3 months. Okay. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar said the following. Orel Shehiza. So we'll say, remember, what comes out over here, the following, is the way we paskin, by the way, is that Mila, even Shalo Bizmano, still what? Still is done by day. So therefore, again, in any of these cases where you're going to require a mila, be it midirabanan or be it midiraisa, it's always going to be done by day. Similarly with nosar, even if nosar is left over past the first day of consumption, lemais, again, nosar still has to be burned by day. Amar Belazar, Orel Shehiza, Haza Osuk Shenavos, and this is very interesting. Remember, in yesterday's daf, we spoke about the idea that an Orel is permitted to become purified from corpse tumah, right, through the ashes of the paraduma. Now the Gemara's kasha is, well, not the kasha, Rabbi Elazar says that an orel is permitted to sprinkle as well. He could take the water of the paraduma, and he could be the one who actually sprinkles it on the person who's tummy. Obviously, Rabbi Elazar, the orel himself has to be tahor, but the idea is he could be tahor, but he's an orel. He's permitted to sprinkle it. So the Gemara says, midi dahavi atvul yom, because he's no worse than a tvul yom. So Rabbi Elazar, remember, a tvul yom was a person who went ahead and was tummy, but went to the mikvah, but still requires her of shemesh, still requires sending the sun. So he's no worse than a tvul yom. Sha'af api sha'asr b'truma, because even though a tvul yom can't eat truma, kasher bepara, he is permitted, he's kasher to go ahead and deal with the paraduma. So the Gemara says, Malit tvul yom shekein mutter b'meiser, but yet the tvul yom himself is permitted to go ahead and eat meiser, which again, of course, the orel cannot. To which the Gemara says, 1 second, atu analachi lekaminon, we're not talking about consumption over here. Anan l'negia kamrinon. We are talking about what? We are talking about touching. We are not referring over here to consumption. We're just referring to touching. Umat volyom sha'aser b'negia d'truma muter bepara. So when it comes to a tvolyom, who is not permitted to go ahead and even touch truma, because it was a still has some element of ritual impurity, but yet what? He is muter in paraduma. Orel shemuter b'negia. Certainly, again, who's not permitted to eat truma, but is permitted to touch it. So certainly, again, he should be permitted to go ahead and sprinkle the ashes of the paraduma. Right, so that supports this. Arel Shehiza has also Kshera. An Arel went ahead and sprinkled the ashes of the paraduma on the person who was tameh. Such a sprinkling, again, is permitted, is kosher. And this actually happened once. V'echshiru chachamim haza aso. And the rabbi said that the sprinkling is absolutely kosher. Meisis, where is the kasha? Meisve, tumtum shekidei shkidusho pasol. If you have a tumtum who went ahead and was Mekadesh Ran. I'm also saying, in this case, Rashi says, Shekidesh, She'irev Efer B'mayim. Of my, so what happens? I'm also saying, Kidesh refers to the fact that you take the ashes and you mix it with the spring water. So if you had an Orel, excuse me, if you had a Tumtum that went ahead and was Mekadesh, the water, Pasel, Mipneshu, Safek Orel. Because ultimately, again, the Tumtum is a Safek Orel. The Orel, Pasel, Kadesh, and the Orel is not permitted to go ahead and sanctify, meaning mix, the waters of the Paraduma. On the other hand, Vadrogenous Shekidish, but if an Adrogenous mixed the waters, Kiddush HaKasher, ultimately, again, that Kiddush is permitted. That Kiddush, say, look at Rashi, Adrogenous Mahol, Shekidush, Shekidish, Kiddush HaKasher, Vafilu Isha, Ksher, Lekadish. Comes also, remember, as long as the Adrogenous is circumcised, either way, he's okay. Because if he's a man, it's permitted. And if it's a woman is also permitted to go ahead and mix the ashes of the Paraduma. Rabbi Huda says, Af Androgenous Shekidish, Kiddush, even an androgynous who sanctified the waters of sanctification as possible. Why? Because he's a suffic isha. The isha psulim kadish, and the isha is not permitted to mix the waters. Katani miha. What do we see from here? Arel, the suffic arel pasul milakadish. So we'll say again, what do you see from here? That what comes out for us? That according to this price, according to this statement, an arel and the suffic arel are prohibited to go ahead and what? Are prohibited to mix the water. So what's it? It's a contradiction, because we just said before that what? That the tumtum, right? That the tumtum ultimately again should be permitted to go ahead and mix. Amar Rav Yosef, hi Tana, Tana de Rabbi Akivi. The marbi leilo arel kitami. So we'll say now essentially what it comes down to is we have a machlokas whether or not an arel is permitted to go ahead and mix the waters of the paraduma. And Rabbi Akiva apparently is the one who holds that he can't. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva treats an arel like someone who is tame. Disanya, Rabbi Akiva says ish ish. When the pasuk says ish ish, this is ish ish mizera aron v'utsarua ozav lo bakadoshim lo yochal adashar yital. So what does ish ish come to include? L'rabosar. So ish ish, that extra ish comes to include the Arel, to say that the Arel is like someone who's Tameh, and therefore the Arel may not participate in the creation of the waters of the Paraduma. All right, Bosse, we're going to stop over here. We're gonna pick up Emir Tzashem with Amar Rava tomorrow. So we're leaving off in the middle of this sugya, namely about, again, remember, we started off with the statement that an Arel is permitted to go ahead and sprinkle the ashes of the Paraduma, and the Arel therefore permitted to mix the waters of the Paraduma. Rabbi Akiva clearly disagrees with that, because Rabbi Akiva treats the Arel like someone who is Tameh. Emirat Hashem to be continued.